time for our Ask an Expert segment. As you know, we're all navigating unprecedented times, and what we're trying to do here is get the best answers we can to all of the questions that have been popping up about the new lives we find ourselves in now. So each weekday morning at 9:20, we're doing one of these Ask an Expert segments. Each day, we'll try to focus on a different slice of the problem, and today we're talking about education, teaching. So many families are now suddenly at home, working from home, and dealing with the children, trying to figure out how to manage it all. We're joined on the KCBS Ring Central Newsline this morning by Julie Lithcott-Hames. She's the former Stanford University Dean of Freshmen and the author of How to Raise an Adult, Break Free of the Overparenting Trap, and Prepare Your Kid for Success. Julie, thanks for taking the time. Certainly, in the world of education, we've never seen anything like this.
Hi, Stan. It's great to be on your show. Hello, Bay Area. It's great to be coming to you across the amazing KCBS radio waves. I'm here in Palo Alto. It's raining. Stan, the first thing I want to say to you is nobody's an expert on sheltering in place and trying to teach your kids and trying to hold down a job and trying to keep your house clean. But what we are expert at is being human beings. And those are the resources that we have to tap into in this really strange and unusual and frightening moment. So I want to start, if I may, by thanking you and your colleagues for being the vital resource that we count on here in the Bay Area for connecting us to information and to one another. And I want to ask you, Stan, how are you doing? And then I will answer the listener's question. Yeah,
well, Julie, that's nice. Thank you. You know, I'm blessed. I live with my wife. We're healthy. We're doing all the right things as best we can. I'm fortunate to have a sense of purpose right now and to have a job I can come to and fortunate to be able to come out of the house to do it. To be perfectly frank, it's a little strange here. We don't have the usual jungle gym going on in the newsroom of people shouting at each other and laughing and arguing. But we do have a few of us here, and then we have the kind of connections you and I are having right now, which feel more intense and more important than ever before. So all things being equal, it could be worse.
Mm-hmm. Amen to that.
Well, thank you. So let's get into some nuts and bolts. These are the kinds of questions people are asking. What's the best way to schedule the day? How many hours should I be teaching my child? All at once? Should we spread it out? I mean, schools have this figured out. How do I do this?
Yeah. So the first thing that I want to say is, go easy on yourself. You've not done this before, and there's no perfect way to do it. So take a deep breath and just accept that. Okay. You're going to be doing your best, and that's what counts. Now, I've never been a K-12 educator, but what I've read a lot about in the last 4 weeks is the following. Rule of thumb, 20 minutes of work starting for kindergartners. You increase by 20 minutes for every grade thereafter. So first graders should get 40 minutes, second graders 60 minutes. That means fifth graders would get 2 hours, and eighth graders would get 3 hours, and 11th graders would get 4 hours, and seniors would get 4 hours and 20 minutes of schoolwork during the day. And not all of that should be crammed down their throats all at once. They need breaks. We need breaks. And so I would say go with a schedule that fits what's happening in your family. We all really need structure during this time. So knowing this is what's going to happen and this is what's going to happen next, that helps tame the anxiety that's really roiling in our minds right now. But let that schedule be a healthy one with breaks that's age appropriate depending on the age of your children.
Okay. I'm afraid my daughter's just going to get hooked on videos and TV and isn't learning anything.
Well, nowadays, TV and videos are not the greatest threat. So while I've rightly been concerned about how much our kids use technology and what it's doing to their brains, really this isn't the pressing concern. Right now we're all struggling. We're looking for comfort. We're looking for connection. And if your kid is enjoying watching videos and hanging out on apps with friends, that's probably the best thing for her to be doing for much of the time, okay? So don't worry about that too much. We can relax those rules and really focus more on how people are doing, checking in with them. How are you feeling today? What's going on? I just woke up this morning and snuggled in with my 18-year-old daughter, who's really struggling. And I just went into her bedroom and I kind of snuggled next to her and I said, I love you so much. I can't possibly know what this is like for you at 18, but I want you to know that I'm here and I'm always here for you. Well, and I did that for her, but I also did that for myself.
Yeah, I mean, so that leads to the next couple of questions, which are around children right around that age. This next one, how should parents or families deal with the loss of things like graduation, prom, and the other milestones that would have been happening if school was in session?
You know, Stan, when you introduced me, you mentioned I'm the author of this book on overparenting. And so I've spent many years focusing on how we've raised a generation of kids to feel like all that matters is college. College, but the right college. We have trained these kids to feel like they are losers if they're not, quote unquote, on track. So we oughtn't be surprised that they are devastated at the loss of these milestones that we have set up as the be-all and end-all reason for existence, okay? We need to bring empathy and compassion to our young people. Some people might be thinking, what's wrong with those kids? Why are they complaining? They're spoiled. No. Summon a memory of your own self at 17, 18, 19, eager to leave your folks home and get out in the world, whether it was the workplace or the military or college. Okay, summon a memory of yourself at that age, hungry for freedom and independence, and see if it can't fuel your compassion for the 18-year-old or 22-year-old in your home right now who's really struggling. That's part one, empathy, compassion. Number two, see what you can do to some sense of ritual for them as these moments that should be happening more publicly have to happen in private, in the home, or online. See if you can find some balloons that you can blow up and tape to the walls. See if you can find some extra pretty lights that you might have used for the holidays. Take your Christmas tree box or your Hanukkah box and pull out some stuff that you can use to jazz up the house for dinner that night. On the day when something special was supposed to happen, see if you can't recreate some semblance of ritual so your kid knows that you're trying to honor the milestone that is happening for them.
And then the kind of a corollary, because now we're reaching these milestones, let's talk about the ones who would have been walking on a stage at a high school graduation ceremony here in a few weeks. So what should they be doing to prepare for college in the fall?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I think our mental health, frankly, is our greatest asset in many ways and is under assault right now. So I would say this is the time to take a lot of deep breaths and connect with people you love and do some writing. Write down in a journal what's going on for you. Read old favorite books. Turn to those authors who wrote maybe those childhood books that are on your shelf that you just loved when you were 5 or 8 or 15. You know, summon the wisdom from the stories that brought you joy when you were younger. These are little things that we can do to kind of be kind to ourselves. I know that doesn't sound like preparing for college, but what I'm talking about is just caretaking the self. If you're trying to prepare for college, have confidence that you are prepared for college, okay? You're still you. You took the classes in high school. Yeah, this final semester has been a little crazy, but you haven't lost your mind and you haven't lost your skills. If you want to get on Khan Academy or Wide Open School or study.com to try to brush up on this and that, and you have internet access, it's more power to you. Do those things. But let's not turn this into a race to be ready for college. Have confidence that bringing a mentally well and stable self to college is probably the greatest tool you want to have in your toolkit.
Our guest on Ask an Expert this morning is Julie Lithcott-Hames, the former Stanford University Dean of Freshmen and the author of How to Raise an Adult, Break Free of the Overparenting Trap, and Prepare Your Kid for Success. You mentioned internet access. So some families are feeling behind the curve. You know, they sense that everybody else has fill in the blank, and maybe they don't.
Yeah. Boy, Stan, hasn't this crisis completely illuminated the digital divide? You know, I think folks, if they didn't previously appreciate what that meant, if they had the privilege of not having to worry about that, I think folks are getting it now. And of course, the people who are at the other end of that divide are like, hello, thank you very much. What are we supposed to do? Frankly speaking, the internet today is the equivalent of roads and electricity and telephones of yesteryear. And the federal government once upon a time decided rural areas need those things and we're going to spend money. Well, it's high time that the government provide broadband and Wi-Fi to all Americans. Now, some communities like down here near me in San Jose, I know the mayor has put up Wi-Fi devices on street poles in the last couple of years to make sure that folks can have access to the internet. And in some communities, schools are putting routers in school buses and parking them on streets and neighborhoods where it's likely people don't have internet access. These are local solutions, which are great, but we need a national solution. In the meantime, there's an amazing Bay Area organization, caveat, I'm on their board, so I'm biased. Take this with a grain of salt. It's Common Sense, formerly known as Common Sense Media, and they are really playing a leading role in this. They have a brand new website called wideopenschool.org. They're partnering with tons of the best content providers. They've created a beautiful user interface where you can go on and say, I'm a teacher or we're a family, and access content for your kid or your students, depending on their age and stage. And they are helping lead this charge for internet access for all. And they're partnering with Comcast to make this content free to people. I don't have all the details, but go to wideopenschool.org. It's a fabulous resource that was pulled together almost literally overnight by the Bay Area leaders we've come to know and love. Together, we need to ensure that everybody has access. And if you know somebody that doesn't have a device and you've got five in your house, type it down, drop it at their doorstep, let them know that it's there. And, you know, let's share some devices because people don't have access to participate in education and in our society if they lack the devices.
This next one, you know, teachers are in this too. I'm a teacher. I honestly don't know if what I'm doing is working. This distance learning stuff is all new to me. You know, anecdotally, I've talked with elementary, high school, and even college professors who were completely unprepared for this. So it's easy to say, let's go online, but it's not that easy.
It's not that easy. If you think about it, Stan, if you're a teacher of English in high school or English literature in college, it's pretty easy to assign a book, if everyone has the book, and then have an online discussion about the book, and students can write papers and you can critique those papers. If you're a teacher of English, that translates well to online learning. If you're teaching mechanical engineering, or you're teaching chemistry, or you're teaching dance, or you're teaching orchestra, these things don't translate well to online learning, okay? So the disciplines are not sort of all equal when it comes to their accessibility online. Frankly, I don't know. I mean, this is new for everybody. Everybody is winging it. Almost everybody is winging it. There are some people who have been doing this for some time, but very, very few. And this is where I just go back to, like, don't expect that you're an expert at this. You're not, and that's okay. We parents need to be giving the teachers a break. Teachers need to be giving kids a break. The best thing we can do right now is show up with our humanity and our compassion, knowing everybody is trying to do their best in a situation that is frightening and confusing. And so it is what it is. Let it be what it is. Don't be too hard on yourself, and let's just kind of virtual hug and keep going.
I get a lesson plan from the school. I assume they're the experts. Should I follow it strictly?
Meaning, is that a question, do you think, from a teacher saying they've got a lesson plan?
I think that's
from
a parent.
Or is that
a
parent?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think
it could go the other way, though, too.
Right. So I think, you know, teachers ought to be improvising as they feel is best, given their expertise and their methodologies. But for parents, if the school is providing a lesson plan, that's a great structure. It's a tool they're offering you, but you still get to decide, does this work for my family today? Okay. You as a parent, if you can't march through that today because some stuff is going on, right, and it's derailed you, that's all right. Your kid's not going to fail at life, you know, or be behind because you didn't get that lesson plan done today. Be kind to yourself. What our kids need more than anything right now, Stan, is parents who have their you-know-what together. I know I'm on the radio. I'm trying not to swear, okay?
We appreciate
our
that.
Our kids need parents who can smile and can breathe and can take an interest in how our child is. Hard because we are losing our minds occasionally as well. So working on just calming ourselves down and providing food and nourishment and kindness, that should be a part of the lesson plan every day. And we have to put on our own oxygen mask first as parents if we're going to be capable of being who our kids deserve. One of the reasons I went into my 18-year-old this morning is we had a little bit of a tiff last night. And boy, I hope she's not listening to the radio. We had a bit of a tiff, and I was a bit frustrated with her. And I woke up this morning realizing, Julie, she's 18. You're 52. Get over it. She's struggling. She doesn't have the resilience and the capacity to cope with scary things like this that you ought to have at 52. So, Julie, you have to be the bigger person. You get in there and tell your child that you adore her and you want to be there for exactly what she needs, okay? I had to do that work on myself so I could show up and be what my kid needs.
Now, you just answered the next question, which was, how do I not get into power struggles with a headstrong 8-year-old? So we'll just move on beyond that one. Let's make this the last one then, because I don't want to take up too much more of your time. This question, the person says, I know life is a great teacher, but how do I make sure the things we're doing around the house, whether it's cooking or working on the budget or fixing the car or painting a fence, have some educational value?
Well, I think the answer is embedded in the question, Stan. All of those things inherently have educational value. Look, putting my author hat on in How to Raise an Adult, I talk about how we're supposed to be teaching our kids skills so they leave our homes empowered to go out and do things for themselves, whether in the workplace or college or the military. They're supposed to learn skills at home instead of us handling everything for them and fostering a complete dependency on us. Now, I'm going to give a shout out to my friend Stacy Ashland here in Palo Alto, who taught me this 4-step method for teaching any kid any skill. It goes like this. First, you do it for them. Then you do it with them. Then you watch them do it. And finally, they can do it completely on their own. Let's take an example, learning to cook. First, you do it for them. You're making all their meals. They're just sitting there waiting to be served. And you're done. Second, you do it with them. This is where you say, hey, kid, I want to have you watch me make this grilled cheese sandwich. You know, I want you to see the steps. I want you to understand how it's done. And they're there next to you, and they're eager, and you're narrating out loud and teaching, and they watch you, and you might do that a couple times. And then you move to step three. You watch them do it. You flip the roles. Now your kid's at the stove. You're still there to make sure they don't set the house on fire or cut their fingers off with a knife, right? But you're not micromanaging. You're there just in case. And you watch them use the stove carefully and give them pointers, and they do that a couple times. And then finally, they can make a grilled cheese sandwich when you're not there, okay? Depending on the age, these steps could be accomplished in the span of a weekend, or it might take a year. It depends on the skill we're talking about as well. But it applies to things that you might do to fix up the car, making meals, cleaning the house, learning to drive, learning to cross the street. It applies to everything. Okay. So that's my little tidbit. You can find more at juliescotthames.com on my website, tips for parenting on the parenting tab. These 4 steps are laid out there. In short, life is a great teacher, as your really wise listener intimated. And there are constant lessons as we all shelter in place for how to do stuff. My mother, who's 81 and listening, hi mom, she taught my kid to embroider. And my husband and kid just made candles. I mean, we're going back to learning skills that have been lost to a generation that thought all they had to do was do Kumon and other kinds of test prep, okay? All the stuff you can learn at home. These are the things they'll emerge from our home knowing. This could end up, Stan, this generation could end up being fueled with so much strength and skills because of what they learned the hard way by having to shelter in place. I'm super excited for them, actually. As scary and bewildering as this is, I just think we might emerge from this collectively, and especially with regard to our young people, even stronger.
Can I tell you something? This felt good.
Glad, Stan. Thank you. Glad to be part of your day. Love you, Bay Area.
Okay,
stay
bye-bye.
Well, everybody.
Thank
bye.
You. Bye-bye. That's Julie Lithcutt-Hames. She's the former Stanford University Dean of Freshmen, the author of How to Raise an Adult, Break Free of the Overparenting Trap, and Prepare Your Kid for Success. And a reminder, we will shortly have this segment posted, and we'll be working on a transcript as well. We can guarantee you the audio file in fairly short order. The transcripts take a little longer. Just keep track of us at KCBSRadio.com/askanexpert. And any questions you may have for the days ahead, ask us at KCBSRadio.com.